All right, quiet and down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee Pub Studios. Another Brit and Yankee craft beer pubcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now.
Knock the wild dune, bring the drums in, let's have a party. Pump up the bitter. Shh, test it. Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Take it away, lad. You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Pump up the bitter. All right, this is Pubcast number 274. And Lingo, you're with me again.
I am, as always.
Good man.
Anymore, at least.
It is truly the Brit and Yankee here. We're sitting in a brewery, which is way up north to where the Brit and Yankee pub is located, down in West Chicago. So we've come a distance to Waukegan, and up here in Waukegan, we have come to get some beer. Although I don't think that that's the true definition of that phrase, but you know who will tell us?
Who's that?
Larry Bloom, who is here with me and is the owner, head brewer, and all-around good guy for some beer. Hey, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
When we met, it was at Long Grove Beer Festival. You had the stand next to where I was pouring for Buffalo Creek. And I said, hey, you know, let's taste some of your beers. And I tasted some of what you had there. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I liked what I tasted. I think one of them was kind of a sort of a wit style, was it? Or was it some sort of, had some floral herbal stuff in it?
That was a American wheat beer with tamarind and ginger.
That was it. And I have that on the list here, so we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
I think we chose that one, didn't we? So before we go any further, I just want to let people know that we are Pints at the Brit and Yankee, if you want to get hold of us on email. We're also on Facebook, and we tweet occasionally. Yep. I haven't Insta'd on Instagram, though. I'm not quite certain how to do that. Do you have a social media presence?
We do. We're on Facebook. We use Instagram to a lesser degree. Although I've been told that's the way to go for the new generation.
Is it really?
I am a little bit older than the new generation.
I think you and I are in the same area, so
probably.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. Mike has a little bit of a knowledge of social stuff because he's got those type of age kids, right?
Yes, of course. I have to keep up with them so I can see what they're up to, the little oiks.
All right, so let's talk about Zumbeer. And first of all, as I said, what's the meaning of Zumbeer?
Well, it's actually pronounced Zumbeer.
Oh, damn!
but you wouldn't know that unless you were German.
Oh, and that is the voice. That is the voice of Larry's wife, yeah, coming in from the background. And it's lovely Talia, and I pronounce it Talia, and I was wrong. Now, you have German heritage, right?
Yes. I've been here 32 years. I was born and raised in Germany.
You were? Okay. Yeah. Whereabouts in Germany?
Well, I was born in Heidelberg, moved to Eberbach for just a smidgen of a time, which is in the lovely Odenwald. Look it up if you can. It's great.
It means old woods.
Yeah.
I'll Google
kind
it.
Of. And then we moved to a very small village where my grandparents settled in the Pfälzerwald. The Pfälzerwald is in Rhineland-Palatinate, and it's nestled in a little valley called Steinalben between Kaiserslautern and Pirmasens. And to give you a reference, it's just 20 minutes from Ramstein Air Base.
Oh, okay. I still don't know where it is.
That's all right.
Now that explains, okay, so we'll go back to Zumbeer in a second, but that would explain why you have quite a selection of traditional style beers. Mm-hmm. Because obviously beer is a very big thing in Germany, and there's lots of great styles to choose from. So was that the basis for starting the brewery?
Well, yes. Actually, we started with the name Soon Beer because it means to the beer or destination beer. And we saw the coming of a more experiential type of brewery. And so we brew things and we try to roll an experiencing of beer styles into the tap room and into our beers.
And you have some different flavors around those beers, because the one that we've got a selection of samplers, and the first beer that we selected, because you have about 8 to 12 of them on tap at the moment?
Yeah, there's 12 on right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The first one we chose was your Berliner Weiss, and it comes in two flavors, literally. Now, I know in Germany they're going to have Woodruff and the raspberry syrup, typically, but you've Correct. Gone with what?
We've used lime in place of the in place of Woodruff, which is a banned substance, so they have to use artificial.
Is it?
Flavorings.
Oh, I didn't know that. And I got it grown in my yard. I was going to say, do you want some?
Well, you can use Woodruff in sparingly, but it contains coumarin, which is going to thin your blood. And if you're on medications, especially blood thinners, you wouldn't want to have any coumarin added to your system.
So what you're saying is, if you had a heart condition back in Germany, you should drink plenty of Berliner Weiss with the Woodruff in it.
I would.
Talia is nodding.
I would say if you could calibrate it enough for your doctor, then yes, that would be a viable way to get your blood thin.
Those damn doctors are going to tell you that one or two beers a day is far too much. Yeah.
They don't know everything.
Yeah. All right. So back to the origins. So Zoom Beer became To the Beer, and you decided to call the brewery that. How long ago have you been? Did you start up? When you opened? What's the history here?
We started to think about opening in 2011, and we began co-founding Urban Legend Brewing, which ended up in Westmont.
Oh.
And at the point where my co-founder Tim wanted to move to Westmont, I told him I would prefer to happily stay closer to home. And then we decided we would take a completely different name that reflected our personality, and began incorporating Zoom Beer in 2012.
And obviously you've come further north, because here you are in Waukegan.
This is based near our home. We've been in Waukegan and Gurnee for over 30 years. And we really wanted to build a community place for the people that live near us and around us. And so we brought beer to a place that traditionally is drinking Miller Lite and light beers like that, or Modelo. And yeah. And then so we brought a better class of beer to our own hometown.
And on the list that you have here, it says different categories, and one of them is light auto-style beers.
Mm-hmm.
Spelled B-I-E-R-S, of course. And so that is kind of your homage to those folks who used to drink the traditional American lagers.
Well, we want to serve a beer that everyone can enjoy, so light beers have their place in our lineup. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to do things that have already been done very well en masse by the big companies. So, right. So we make our light beers more style beers, like Berliner Weiss or Witbier or German Kolsch or things like wheat beers, in order to serve our people who like lighter beers or less hoppy beers.
So what do you reckon on this Berliner? Obviously, you like it because you've got rid of it, Lingo.
Well, you haven't had.
And I don't mean throwing it away.
So I'm like, yeah. I have nothing else to do but drink it. But oh no, it's great. And lately, I've been into the sours, and this is very enjoyable, very refreshing, very very refreshing.
And I always find that the Berliner Weiss is have that line just between, like, it's almost going into a goza, where there's a little bit of that at the end that you think, oh, it's a little salty, but it's not really. It is more that tartness that comes out, right?
It's Berliner Weiss is strictly done traditionally here. It's low ABV, it's a refresher, mm-hmm. and it's a beer that I feel safe. If I'm going to be handling equipment, I can have a beer at lunch and not be impaired or endanger myself.
Yeah.
So you're not a big fan of cherry. What do you think of that one? Because I had the lime. Now you have the same thing, but with cherry.
So tell us how you like the lime one. Does it come through?
Oh, no. It's very subtle, but it's there. You can actually get that. But it's not overpowering. It's not super puckery. As some yeah. sour, especially when you start to throw some citrus in that's like a lemon or a lime that really throws the sourness or the pucker level up.
And I agree. This cherry one is subtle. It's not sweet. So what did you put in? Real cherries? Cherry juice? Or?
We used real cherry concentrate that okay. we got from Michigan. It was grown and packaged there. The cherry is in homage to Talia's birthplace. Heidelberg is famous for tart cherries.
Okay.
So we figured that was a bigger, better thing to show our own personality in place of raspberries.
So it seems like there's a lot of you guys in this environment here. Do you have anybody else who brews with you, or is it just you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, my youngest son, Matthew, is working with the fire department locally, and on his days off he brews most of our beer now.
Oh, so you're talking about your son's getting involved. What was the reaction when you told, like, family, hey, we're gonna go full force, we're gonna open a brewery?
Well, I always say that Talia gets a lot of credit for this, for Zoom Beer being here, because she didn't call me crazy or stomp out or anything. She was always fully supportive, and so she's the biggest part of the family that made Zoom Beer possible. Matthew and Lauren and Jan and Misha sort of looked at me like, oh yeah, this is another crazy dad thing. And when I pursue projects, I tend to dive in head first, and so they pretty much accepted it as part of being me.
Yep. And so what size system do you have here?
We use a 1.5 or 1.75 barrel system. It's the 80 gallon kettle and
okay.
and mash tun that you can see behind you.
And you obviously brew adequate beer to keep people happy, because you have a nice selection. And I'm sure, you know, what are you brewing, 3 or 4 kegs at a time?
It's about four half barrels, yeah.
Okay, oh, 4 half barrels, okay.
Oh,
wow. Well, then you have to brew more, right? So it's always fresh.
Yes.
Which is a really good thing.
It gives us a lot of variability in styles. We've had over 100 beers in 4 years. And it also allows us to keep a lot of things on tap, so that all of our customers can feel comfortable coming in.
When you brew that quantity, what kind of turnaround do you have? Is it typical for all of the beers, or do you find some are going faster than others? And what kind of time frame do they last? You're doing 4 half kegs. How long does one typically last?
The IPAs and New England IPAs are very popular, of course, and they turn around a lot quicker than to style beers. And so we'll brew the IPAs and the New England IPAs maybe once a week or twice a week, just to keep the taps running.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We run out of beer very regularly.
Right. Well, I'm glad to say you haven't run out of beer here, so we're going to move on to our next sample just after this quick break.
Ein Prosit, ein Prosit der Gemütlichkeit.
Ein Prosit, ein Prosit der Gemütlichkeit. Zur Mitte, zur Titte, zum Sack, Zack, Zack.
Okay, we're back with a second beer in our selection. Now, we haven't got all the beers, and we're probably not going to try them all on the mic, but this one that we have, and I've had my sips lingo, so you can go ahead and have yours. This was one that is called Purpose, and I think I tasted this one at the beer festival we were at, and I really enjoyed it. So tell us a little bit about this boy.
We made this beer in mind. Talia and I wanted to make a beer specifically for a new sushi restaurant around the corner from us. And we wanted to make a beer that would go well with raw fish and Asian dishes, which is a little complicated by using too much hops in most beers' cases. So we made a light beer, and we also used Asian flavors. Tamarind and ginger are slightly bitter, and of course ginger, and balanced it into the wheat beer.
And you know, I'm not certain I've ever tasted tamarind by itself. It's always one of those things that you think, oh, that sounds good, but you never like taste it like a spice. It's a spice, right? And then you take it out and with a powder or something like that. I've heard of the tamarind tree. Wasn't that a movie with Julie Andrews? I don't know.
It is. It's a seed pod, and Talia made the first paste. It's a seed pod that you open up, take out the seeds, and crush them, and then make a puree. And it's pretty bitter and needs some sweetness to make it drinkable.
And a beagle's on it, certainly.
Enough of the sours for you.
Then add the other thing I like about this, and wheat beers are really nice because they always tend to come out with a slightly different flavor to your normal beer, obviously because of the wheat, but they usually have a good head on them when you pour it in a, I don't know why it is, I always pour wheat beer and it tends to have a really nice head on it. The ginger is very prominent, but not enough to go, oh, this is a ginger beer. The combination between the two is really good. I liked it then, I like it now. This is my beer of choice so far for a pint, if you will.
Well, thanks. Talia is such an excellent cook that balance is really important to us. So it needed to be all of those flavors working together. And wheat beer, of course, holds up those fruit flavors, those other flavors a lot more. So
when you guys are brewing, then do you have her come in, since she has also a unique palate, then if she's a good cook, she's got to have a good palate, to get her opinion, what do you think the balance is, how do you think this flows, blah, blah.
Constantly.
Oh, okay. Good answer.
And Talia is a fine German woman, so her opinion is quite to the point or blunt. And so we cut to the quick very efficiently.
Good. Why waste time?
Right.
Time is money in this industry.
And it's all about efficiency, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So German efficiency, we know all about that, you know?
And also,
see, I'm English. I can make those jokes.
and also consistency.
Since they do
have a smaller, and turning it over quite frequently, consistency seems to be really key to doing that. And it seems like with the success you're having, that's definitely, you're hitting on all cylinders when it comes to that.
So how did you get into brewing? I mean, you're commercial now. Were you like a lot of people where you started off as a home brewer? Or did you suddenly one day say, hey, I'd like to start a brewery?
I started brewing at Talia's request to help my stepson Jan embrace a new hobby, and he didn't embrace it, but I did. It stuck.
Three brews in, the kid says, I'm out. This is work.
Well, you said your son is getting into it. What kind of advice did you give him? Hey, never forget this, or, you know, to be a good brewmaster, what kind of advice are you passing on? to your son?
Well, Matthew is being led by example. Okay. So he sees that I'm precise with weights and measures. I also follow the same procedure pretty rigorously. And he also sees that it's okay for him to ask questions and in order to keep the same product all the time.
And from the aspect of now, he doesn't get involved in anything. It's all you and your other son, right?
The son that didn't
keep... The good son, should we say. The one who likes brewing. No.
Well, when I started brewing, Matthew was pretty young, and he wasn't ready to start embracing beer. And Jan moved on to other interests, and...
There you go.
I wouldn't say not the good son, but he definitely couldn't be cajoled into helping with the beer.
So when you started this place up, so let's actually describe where we are. So it's off, what's the main drag down there I came on?
Washington.
Yeah, that's it, Washington Street. Mm-hmm. And you come back a little bit to an industrial area. Right. And like so many breweries are, they're in an old industrial building. How did you come into this place? Because it is quite expansive. What have you got here? Like,
this is 5,000 square feet.
Yeah, okay.
And it belongs... My landlord is also my next-door neighbor at home.
Oh, well, that's convenient. And when it comes around to rent time.
He would see me in the garage brewing all winter long a few times a week, and... He had this empty space, empty industrial space, and said, "Well, why don't you come use the space? It's underutilized, and maybe you could make something of it, and I could gain a steady tenant
income of beer."
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you barter for it?
Well, actually, he's not the biggest beer lover.
Oh.
He'll drink light beers and things like that.
But right.
He does enjoy a pretty steady rent income.
What was the first style that you brewed to get going here? Because you thought, okay, I'm going to brew something that I know how to brew, a traditional one. Or was it an IPA, which seems to be the critical beer that everybody has to have, right? Whether it's hazy or standard.
Our very first beer was created for a group that was going to have a convention in Chicago, and it was a double pale ale and very hoppy. I would say almost IPA hoppy.
Okay.
And so Hooch Number 5 was our very first beer that we brewed.
It wasn't then a German style beer or anything like that.
No.
You just went for one because they wanted it brewed.
Yeah, that was the first beer on our agenda because they wanted to use it for their conference.
Well, what did you find when you start brewing beers and you're brewing new beers? What is one you like to brew the most? What is your favorite, or which one is really fun to do? You really like, oh man, I can't wait to do this one again.
That's an interesting question.
Picking out the favorite child.
Yeah, we've had over 100 beers, and I really enjoy the barrel aged beers. They tend to be a long, arduous barrel aging process.
Right,
but the reward at the end is very good.
And as we sit here, you have a couple of racks of barrels going on there. So, are you finding it? More and more people are looking for the barrel-aged beers?
Well, I would say the consumers are looking for barrel-aged beers as well as everyday beers like New England IPAs. Mm-hmm. And then there's another interest in pastry stouts.
Oh, well, that's
pancakes.
But that's not... Okay. Yeah, I guess
that's
not pastry.
Well, you do have the rum stout, barrel-aged stout with the coconut and stuff on, too.
No.
So how have you found that as far as, I mean, some people say, you know, summer or spring is not the time for stout. We were talking earlier that I could drink stout any time of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's especially something like that. It really changes up the taste and stuff.
Well, I have to point the finger back at Saleha with the Maui Trickster. She found a porter with coconut in 2011 at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver and said, I want you to make a coconut beer. And of course I said, that's crazy.
And make it better than this one.
And she had her way, and probably 12 different varieties later, we came up with a milk stout with chocolate and coconut. And that tends to sell as well as almost anything else besides Liberty Call in our lineup.
I went on to the IPA because we got a couple of others we wanted to hit. And this one is just this, what's it called? I don't see it on the, Liberty Call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's the one. So this is straight up, nothing fancy, typical hops in it.
Pretty straightforward hops. I wanted to use hops that we could always get so that we could make the beer consistently, mm-hmm. and probably make it once a week or more, that so that we can keep it on tap all the time.
Right.
So it's like some of the other beers that you've seen on the market that are gluten reduced with a special enzyme.
Right.
And it serves to make the body lighter. It also makes it safer for our friends that are more intolerant of gluten.
So it says gluten reduced naturally with Clarity Firm. What is that? I've not come across that. It must be brewing.
That's the enzyme name from White Labs.
Oh, okay.
Same as used in Delicious by Stone and Two Brothers beers.
You're not a big IPA man. What do you think of this one? Is it, you know, kind of a nice, ordinary? Because I think it's a very ordinary. That's the wrong word. I shouldn't say that. This is a very good IPA to come along and just say, yeah, it's a nice bite. It's not too hoppy. It's not too citrusy. It's nice and smooth.
And I was going to say, it's not ordinary, because the one thing I noticed right off is the fragrance is wonderful. It smells beautiful, like an IPA, I imagine, should smell. I'm not one for hoppiness. This one isn't as hoppy as I would always imagine them being. But the thing I noticed is sometimes some of the real hoppy ones, that bitterness will hang in there as an aftertaste and hang in there. This one, I don't know if it's because it helps to be, you know, a lot gluten-free, or it is 100% gluten-free?
It's gluten-reduced.
Okay, gluten-reduced, but maybe that's helping with the bitterness. You get a little bit, but it doesn't hang on forever. It kind of just, you get a little bit in the aftertaste, and then it just kind of goes away.
Many of our IPAs are hop-bursted, so they don't have a lot of boil hops in the bittering phase of the boil. We use them late edition hops for the flavor and aromas that are unique to the hops, because we really love hops for the smell and the flavors than much more than for the bittering.
So talk about the other two. I think there's just two more IPAs on your list, which both appear to be New England IPA style, and one is called Orange Dreams, or made of this. And that, hey, wasn't that Sweet Dreams Are Made of This? There we go. I knew that. Yeah. And then the other one is called June IPA, which includes juniper berries. Okay.
Right,
which, that's the one you got. So, okay, first off, what do you think about these hazy New England IPAs? If you don't like them, but you make them, I understand why. Okay.
I understand why people like them. They're juicy. They're sweet. Sometimes they taste like fruit juice, and to me it was anti what a brewer does to make a beer that would stay hazy and juicy like that. Adding lactose to an IPA seemed crazy, but the customers really wanted to have that kind of beer, and so I learned how to do something that I didn't know how to do previously.
We did have a sip of Talea's the June IPA juice, because juniper berries in things to me really add a certain difference, and it's not often you get it. It seems to be more and more they're picking up on it. And when it says juniper berries, piney and juicy, I would agree with that 100%. That pretty much sums everything up. So the other one, your orange dreams, I don't think I'm going to like it because I do not like those orange hop profiles. But this one, that juniper berry and the pininess, that's what I like. I like the pininess. I'm a big fan of Sierra Nevada's Celebration, which, you know, looks great, tastes great. They've been doing it for a long time, so why not? And it's not hazy. But this one, you know, if I didn't have to look at it, I'd say, oh, this is a tasty beer. It should be clear. Come on, let's be honest.
For 2 years, it was clear.
Oh.
But we wanted it to be a New England IPA to hold up the other parts, the juiciness. And so once I cracked the code to New England IPAs that are so popular, it became more hazy than it was. Although it's atypical because gin berries are somewhat bitter, and a lot of people who are looking for a New England IPA don't really like that bitterness that comes with the juniper.
Well, we'll finish up our sample of the IPA here, and then we'll head to the dark side in our next section.
Hi, this is Larry.
And this is Talea from Zoom Beer.
Whenever we want to know about craft beer, we listen to the Brit and Yankee podcast.
So mitte, to titte, zum zack, zack, zack.
I say, I can't have that on my podcast.
And we know what it means.
Sitting in front of me is an evil squirrel, but no, it's not running around. Oh, I think it's evil squirrel. Am I right on that one?
Yes, you are.
It is.
It is a brown ale.
A brown ale. Now, as it's called evil squirrel, is it a nut brown ale?
It is not. It's a evil squirrel was a nemesis of our late dog, Luna. Evil squirrel is named after her. She had a squirrel that she would do battle with on a daily basis.
Oh, I see.
So it's named after him.
Oh, okay. So unfortunately, it sounds like the dog passed on, and hopefully the squirrel has too, right?
She did. I would think so.
Okay. So this is a delightful... It's actually a mahogany dark brown, so not your Newcastle brown color. I think there was two types of browns originally. There was like southern and northern. Is that right? But now they've combined it and it's just one brown ale?
I just think of it as an American brown.
Okay.
Rather than the English style browns are a little bit lighter, less body, more revealing of the nuance of flavors.
So tell us a little bit about this one. I've tasted it. Go ahead, Linga. Tell us, what's in this little puppy.
It's got a fairly heavy dose of oat and wheat flake to make it creamy. Mm-hmm. When we first started, we didn't have a nitro tap, and so we couldn't make the beers artificially creamy. So we used flake products to make it more glutinous and creamier in the mouthfeel.
I think you succeeded because it has a delicious mouthfeel, and it really hits all my points because it's almost nut brown. It's heading right in that direction. It's very malty,
mm-hmm. Which I like. It's very, very good. This is one that I would tend to make almost my session beer. This is very good.
So the evil squirrel has turned up trumps here. So,
right.
Tell us a little bit about your views on where the craft beer boom is headed, and has it kind of, have you seen a change in your clientele's tastes? And by that, I think your answer is going to tell me what type of clientele you might have.
What clientele?
Well, it's clientele.
Clientele.
Okay.
Stop it.
Tomato.
Let's go the whole thing.
So when we first started, we thought we would be a packaging brewery and just have a bottle shop and growler fill station up front and not even have a tap room or tend to our plants that came in to visit us, and quickly we learned that the people that came in wanted to stay here and have the full experience of tasting the beer in the place that it was made. And so that's the first thing that our clients were telling us. And then when we pay attention to their tastes in beer, they generally start out saying they don't like dark beers because they're too thick and heavy.
Yep.
And they only like light beers, and they don't want anything too hoppy. And once we get them with their foot in the door and they taste the lighter beers, they start to taste the hoppier beers, the stronger beers, and the more colorful beers. And soon enough, they're drinking very hoppy beers and enjoying things that they said they would never like. And that's just the progression that people who are learning about craft beer go through.
What sort of age is the typical person who comes in here? The reason I'm asking that is because when I first walked in, it wasn't your typical craft beer tap room. It struck me as being like a friendly corner bar almost. Mm-hmm. It's relatively small, but you've got your tappers lined up. You've got a cooler with bottles. Obviously, you've been bottling that. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you see a younger crowd in here, or do you see a more mature, shall we say, regular?
Our original regulars were probably 35, 45, even in the 50-year-old age bracket. And that was mainly because we're in the older age bracket as well, and maybe not as hip as a typical brewery or brewer is.
That's all right. We're not hip either, are we, Lingo?
No.
And
we just have them replaced.
Yeah.
Since we wanted this to be a third space that's not work or not home for people to gather, we tended to gather people more like ourselves first. Now as we come out with beer styles that are more pertinent to millennials and the core of beer drinkers, we're seeing younger and younger people coming in to spend time with us.
Do you see a trend changing as far as like beer styles? Do you see something up and coming that not a lot of people know about yet, and you kind of thinking about moving towards that direction, something new or something different, a new kind of style that's on the horizon?
Well, the talk in the Brewers Association is about lagers and session beers and things like that. And I think they've been talking about it in the Brewers Association for 4 years, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've yet to see the lagers take over the scene.
So have you ever considered doing like a Pilsner or anything like that?
I have considered Pilsners. We're using a direct-fired brewery system. And mm-hmm. so the Pilsner, which is also known to brewers as a naked beer, doesn't hide any flaws.
Right.
And so any caramelization in the kettle would be very noticeable. And so we've been a little bit shy of approaching the naked beers.
How about a Steinbier? Because that's a typical German style that you don't very often see, because it relies upon flat stones mm-hmm. and the caramelization on that stone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking caramelization, there you go. And it fits right in with the misses.
Are you referring to the Steinbier where you heat up the stones and fire?
Yep.
Yeah, I've tasted those. Those are pretty rustic.
But that's fine.
Very earthy.
Rustic is good.
If we come up with some extra time, that's something that we could do without using our stainless steel kettles. We could cut a barrel in half and use that to drop boiling stones into.
If you do it, you can call it the Britain Yankee Steinbier. Yeah?
There you go.
All right.
Scratch Brewing made a Steinbier with, I think it was with Jester King.
Oh, really? Okay.
So they sent their guys down there to the woods in Eva, Illinois, mm-hmm. and and made it with all wood and heated stones, which is traditional, the traditional way to do it. And we thought that beer was really nice.
Oh, wow. So if you were drinking beers outside of your Zoom beer environment, what are some of your favorites? You know, brands, styles, whatever. What do you like to drink outside of Zoom beer?
I look for double IPAs and then...
You like the gummy series.
Oh, from Noon Whistle?
He loves it.
Noon Whistle, yeah, that's one of our favorite breweries. When I'm feeling stingy and I want to get a nice New England IPA that's within a budget, then I'll the new Belgium Hazy Ranger is very nice to my liking. But I'll generally look at a menu for a double IPA first, and then I'll follow that with something experimental and interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a Chata beer at Noon Whistle last time we visited that tasted like rice and cinnamon, and that really those kind of discoveries really excite us.
We went to a brewery in Denver, outside of Denver.
Purpose.
Purpose was amazing. From the former head brewer of New Belgium, and it's purely experimental. They don't brew to style. They just basically explain it like, well, if we see a leaf blow into the brewery on a balmy fall day, whatever that feeling evokes, that's what we're gonna brew that day. And really, their beers were very interesting.
That's because of all the the pot and stuff out there. They're all high out in Colorado.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, just compare it to David Byrne's music.
So I don't know David Byrne.
David Byrne from the Talking Heads.
Oh, that David Byrne. Oh, yeah. So sorry, I haven't seen him for a while.
There too. So David Byrne equals Paul from Purpose. It's really great. So we seek out those kinds of experiences.
How about traditional English ales?
We haven't approached many English ales here at Zoom Beer, but there are certain styles, ESBs and things that we enjoy, and we from time to time do pursue traditional cask ales. So of course, English ale would play into that.
Apparently it's very difficult to brew that type of beer. I'm not certain why, because, hey, shit, we do it all the time.
It's harder to sell than it is to brew. And because cask ale, if it's by camera standards, doesn't have a CO2 breather system on it, it needs to be poured and served within a few days of tapping that cask. And so heating waste as much as we do, cask ale needs to be planned carefully for us.
Looking at your list here, so just actually before we head into our penultimate beer on the dark side, I looked on your list and I saw one that was an apricot session. Start that again. Apricot saison session sour, and you called it.
Yes.
There you go. Thank you very much. I couldn't say it myself, but I wish you had that on. But it says kicked on this, which is a shame because now how do you say the fruit, Talia?
What do you mean the fruit? Apricosa?
No. Oh, well, okay. I was if you said apricot, because I say apricot and they say apricot.
I say apricot.
Yeah, apricot. Well, I say apricot. I pronounce
I say
the
apricot.
A.
I say apricot.
You say apricot.
Yes.
Okay. But what was it in German?
Very European. Apricosa.
I like that. You should put that on there. That's much better. Do you like apricot slinger?
Not really.
Okay.
That's the reason I didn't pick it.
All right. Let's talk about your barrel aged beer. We've kind of saved that as the penultimate because I do have an ultimate one when we wrap this up. What is this called?
That is the bourbon barrel aged Comrade. It's this batch was about 12.5%. It's definitely strong and not for lightweights.
Yeah.
as much as people that really like strong, nice, dark beers.
So let's go to Lingo, because Lingo is a bit of a bourbon man. And give us your impressions of this.
Well, this one scared me right off the bat, because I saw the 12.5%. When I saw the bourbon, I wanted to try this one. So, and I smelled it, and I went, this is going to burn like hell. Which is one of the one things I hate with bourbon barrel beers, that sometimes it's like doing a shot of bourbon, which is fine if that's what I'm expecting. This one, nothing like that. It's got that great bourbon, that smell. Okay, it's really good. It starts your saliva actually going when you smell this beer.
Can I clean up your drool, please?
Yes, please. Give me a bucket. But when I tasted it, it not only had the bourbon taste, but the maltiness of it and the body of it without the burn, just my taste buds were going into overdrive. It was fantastic.
I got when you say burn, I got that when I sipped it, but then as it went down, it was very, very smooth. It was nice, chocolatey, yeah. Good stuff. Did it turn out the way that you wanted it to come out? And do you do a base stout?
We do. Our base comrade is on the Nitro Tap today.
Right. We'll have to try that then.
it's not quite as aromatic as the bourbon barrel aged, of course. But it's nice and creamy, and it's always popular. Even in the summertime, people want to drink that.
We always say that beers like this are your leather chair and cigar beer. I think this one certainly fits into
now,
that.
What was your opinion on this?
Well, I thought it was very temperate on the bourbon, a little more than... it was. I guess it was just about right, okay? It wasn't... you could tell it was in a bourbon barrel. Mm-hmm. A little burn at the beginning, but then it went down smoothly and it hasn't stayed with me in terms of any of that around the mouth. I think the 12% kind of really fits into what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
If this had been any, if you'd said 10%, I'd have said, oh, I think you went over the top with it. But no, I think this is just about right. Did you bottle this?
We did. It's in our cooler right now.
Oh, there we go.
You know what I'm taking home to share with my son? Absolutely. And my wife and her friends.
It's a great sipper. A lot of our bourbon barrel-aged beers do better at 45, 50 degrees Fahrenheit than at 38, which is where we serve it for longevity purposes. We want it to be with us longer, so we store it at a lower temperature.
Well, I think it's... pretty darn good brew, and I think you've done well with it. I'm going to end this segment with a question to you that you can think about. As the head brewer, what keeps you awake at night? We're back, and I have been sitting here enjoying our ultimate beer. Although actually it's not the ultimate beer, because Larry's gone out and brought back the Nitro Russian Imperial Stout as a comparison. Actually, I have to say, not being a bourbon man, I got to go back to the basics, and that's really nice. It's not as smooth as I've tasted, but the chocolatey malts and the intensity of it is right there. You know, and it's on Nitro, which is really interesting. You didn't get a good head, though, did you?
Nope.
You didn't. Came in and said, I haven't had a good head.
And he got slapped for it, too.
Yeah.
And so there.
And most brewers are suckers for a good head.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about... wait a minute. I asked you a question. What keeps you awake at night?
So, honestly, the minutiae of running a very small brewery is what comes to mind in the middle of the night. That's what wakes me up in a cold sweat when I have to, when I think about the things that I need to order, the things that need to be scheduled, and paying the taxes and all those kind of things. That's what startles me awake at night.
Did you have another job before this?
I did.
Or do you still have another job? I don't know.
I was in the painting contracting business for 35 years.
Oh, wow. Well, so Lingo did that for a while, too.
Yeah, I did that for over 15 years. I had my own business.
That's right. And you brushed up on it, didn't you?
Hey! Hey! Right.
So, you know, from the perspective of where I come from, I'm actually a project manager. So the minutia is what I should be looking at. But it's interesting because when I go home, you know, I can't remember anything, right? So now you've got to think about, you know, all that small stuff as a you know, profession, if you will.
Yeah, so always look for the missing pieces, and I'm the one who picks up the loose ends every day. So
the beer that we actually kind of finishing up with here is the one that is named after your lovely wife, Leia. I've now got down pat instead of Talia.
Yeah.
I know. And that is a Dusseldorf Alt beer. And it's particularly interesting because it has a little bit of spiciness to it. Tell us a little bit about it.
Dusseldorf Alt beer is the old beer that was brewed before refrigeration in Germany. So they would literally brew it during the summer at a higher temperature, which called for ale yeast or top fermenting yeast, and then was stored in a cave, that's the lager part, and made a hybrid amber beer that was somewhat spicy and not the same style as most of the German pilsners and lagers that we associate with Germany.
And this has a certain spiciness that I've not tasted in an alt beer before. But you're telling me this is a traditional.
Yeah. Well, we looked at Zumerig, which is the most traditional, the oldest Dusseldorf brew pub in that area. And we managed to get a friend to bring back a bottle directly from Dusseldorf and did the comparison so that we could dial it in and make it as close to that flavor and that profile as we could.
It's certainly something that I'm glad that I tasted. This would be so far my beer of choice when I come here, because these are ones that you can drink all year round and have a balance between something that's lighter and something with a little body. Lingo, do you like alt beers?
Well, I am now. I mean, this one with the, to be honest, I haven't really had a whole lot of them, but this one is very nice. And the first thing I thought of was all the horrible pumpkin beers and stuff we've had for around Halloween. This would be a great one for that season.
Does it actually have spice in it, or is it just from the hops?
It's just hops, and rather than using Hallertau hops, we used Liberty, which is an American hybrid of that particular hop. We used Wisconsin malts, but we recreated the spiciness from the hops and the malt using local ingredients. And
this is a traditional beer that you could potentially put out as all year round Halloween. It's all to do with the marketing, isn't it?
Or even, you know, like something around Christmas or Thanksgiving. This would be great with turkey. This would be awesome with turkey.
Do they drink this beer all year round?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Dusseldorf, that's the mainstay. When you're in Cologne, they drink Kölsch. Mm-hmm. When you're in Dusseldorf, you drink Dusseldorf Alt.
I am so glad that you pronounced the word
Köln.
Kölsch, right?
Kölsch.
Because so many people call it Kölsch, and I thought, that's not quite right, is it?
No.
So, do you have your Kölsch?
You do.
We do. Do you have that on tap right now?
No, we do. It's not on tap right now.
Darn diddly doos.
In October, we'll have Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. Around Thanksgiving, we'll have a gingerbread beer.
Ooh. I tasted a gingerbread beer from Sam Adams. I think they called it Gingerbread Man.
Or is this better?
Did you ever add that?
Yes.
It's better.
I'm sure.
Larry is all about balance. He's a Libra. And everything he approaches with restraint. He analyzes every part of it. Where I would go overboard in my ideas, he says, I love that idea. Now let's make it so it's balanced and everybody loves it, not just you. And together, I think that's what makes our beer so good, is I'm all about the bold flavors and the fragrance, and he's about the subtle nuances.
Which makes a great combination, but I would say that isn't German beer very straight up? I mean,
Reinheitsgebot.
Thank you. Easy for you to say.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that all about the simplicity and the cleanliness of brewing?
Beer purity
laws. It is.
Laws.
Beer purity law was about the four ingredients, and I think Larry can speak much more effervescently about that than I can. I just know the four ingredients, but he knows why that came about.
It was a protectionist act by the king to protect the grain growers from brewers who wanted to use cheap ingredients. America hasn't had that protection, and as the result, our macro beers are made with terribly cheap ingredients and
rice,
and a less than stellar results. Mm-hmm. I would say.
But they're beechwood aged.
Yes. Beechwood sawdust is very expensive.
And we'll leave it at that. Listen, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure here sampling in your beers. And the reason I say that is because you're way up here north, right? So if you're coming up north, there's going to be a couple of other breweries in the area that we know of. I mean, there's Only Child in Gurnee. And I've seen your adverts, you know, Zoom Beer is here and you've been putting it out. I just never got up here, and I'm so glad I came up here. And Lingo, what's your overall impression?
Oh, I think
thumbs up.
Oh, definitely a thumbs up. Well worth the trip. And if you're in the area, anywhere in this area, and I'm going to be telling my brother and sister-in-law who live up in Wadsworth, they need to make a trip down here and definitely pick up some. And when I'm going up to see them, definitely going to be stopping by here to grab a growler.
And I meant to ask you, how much is a Wadsworth these days?
Buck and a half.
Yeah, there we go. Larry, what's coming up in terms of events for you? Are you going to be doing any festivals? It seems like there's, as we heard, three this weekend.
Mm-hmm. We'll be in Mundelein this weekend. at the end of the month, we'll release Hoppy Time, which we brewed today, and you can probably still smell in our brew house. Every Thursday we have live trivia. We're doing a game night tonight and every other Wednesday. So we do all kinds of things. We'll have movie night this weekend. And we do everything to bring our community together and to give them a place to gather and just enjoy themselves. So if you want to know more about what we're doing, you should look at Zoom Beer on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like our feed and then click the little thing that lets you see us first so that Facebook doesn't filter us out, of course.
Right.
And the website is?
The website is right? zoombeer.com.
Okay.
And here's a $64,000 question. What's the phone number?
Our phone number is 847-420-7313.
He knows it. All right, yeah. Good man. And where can people find you, i.e. the address?
We're at 3232 Monroe in Waukegan, Illinois. And if you have a smartphone, Google or use some other smartphone function to look up Waukegan Breweries.
Please.
Waze.
Waze.
Waze got me right here.
Waze?
Exactly.
Oh, that's yep. that's that newfangled app, isn't it? Yeah,
I've
okay.
been using it for years. Right.
Well,
I'm in the 1%.
It's so newfangled.
Yeah, it is.
So we always raise our glasses at the end of this, and it doesn't matter they're empty. We'll fill them up. Sorry. It's going to make a nice clang. So I hang on. Back a bit, down a bit. Wait for it. I usually say good night from me.
And good night from him.
And cheers.
Cheers and eye contact.
Close.
Otherwise, and you won't get late for 7 years.
All my wife says that all the
time. Hang on a minute. What'd you say?
You have
eye
to make
contact.
Eye contact.
Or,
and when my wife does a toast, she has to go around the table. Everybody look at
exactly.
their eyes. And then she would do it to you,
she
and you would look in her
and
eyes.
What,
and you
what happens if you don't do that?
You don't get late. 7 years of bad sex.
Oh, yeah.
No, not bad luck. Bad sex.
Wait a minute. That sounds like
bad
luck.
Bad luck for me.
Hopefully that doesn't explain a lot.
No.
And it's unfriendly. It's unfriendly.
Yeah, okay. Look in their eyes.
Because people don't look at it into each other's eyes often enough these days.
Oh,
we pass
love,
each other by.
You would love my wife.
And we say hello or excuse me, but there's no...
I can't.
None of this.
Yep.
And, you know, here we are. And beer brings people together and builds community.
Amen.
And that's
Amen.
What Zoom beer is all about.
All I can say to that is, aye, aye, matey. Must. I forgot to clang. Sorry.
Skull.
Britain Yankee.
Britain Yankee.
I'll have a pint, Yankee. Go, give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
Oh, a pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.